Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special episode today marking the anniversary of General MacArthur's famed return to the Philippines on October 20th, 1944. Someday I hope I'm going to get to go see those larger-than-life bronze statues rising out of the water at MacArthur Landing Memorial National Park on the island of Leyte, but the general waiting ashore was just symbolic, while the liberation of the island came at a cost. 96th Infantry Division machine gunner Joe Garabedian would become part of that cost. He too came ashore on October 20th, 1944.
Fortunately, when we landed on Leyte, there was no beach fighting. We were kind of tickled about that. But the coxswains were very happy too because they can back off and bring another load in. You can imagine they had to make quite a few trips. That was a hectic time of the war, whether you're going to make it or not. And your question was, what do you think about? What do you think about every morning? I'm still alive. Will I be alive tonight? Four of my outfit died. Why am I here? I'm right there. I got shot through my brachial plexus, which are all your nerve center, and come out and just missed my spine. First of all, the officer threw his binoculars. You know, I'm a poor farm kid. Never seen binoculars in my life, half decent. So I picked it up and put it inside my shirt. After things kind of settled, I took it out and was looking around, and, well, zing, right through my shoulder. Mm-hmm. So it was a sniper. Later on at the Army reunions, one of the guys told me, he says, when they found the guy, they counted 60 shots. He was up in the palm tree.
Mm.
So I got up and I started running. I run about 10 feet. The blood is squirting out. I'm hollering, medics, medics. And I fell down. So my medic comes and, Garabedian, where's your medical kit? I says, it's on the Jeep. I said, I didn't want to carry it. So they gave me a shot of morphine. They patched me up. That's the only patching up I got until I got to Hoanya, New Guinea. So this is an interesting part. They managed to get me on a stretcher, and a fellow by the name of Medziak out of Chicago, he was underneath the bush. He reached down and grabbed a hold of my stretcher, and one hand pulled me underneath that bush. It took another half hour before the firing. You don't fire all day long. It just goes in spurts. So then at about 5:30 in the evening, the Jeep came by and they put three of us on and took us back 14 miles to the field hospital. And my God, we got there. When we got a couple hundred feet from there, we had to stretch a cable on a track layer that was there for this purpose, just to pull the Jeeps or the trucks through the mud.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mud was so deep. They actually slid the vehicles through there. They put me in a tent, and guy says, contending me, he says, where's your dog tag? I says, I left the back on a Jeep. He says, that's a heck of a place to leave it. He says, how am I going to know who you are? Well, it's plain English. I'm Joseph Garabedian, 39421644 is my serial number. Okay, so he put that on a shipping tag, put it around my neck, and that night I was in that tent dark. Just pitch dark. I felt something coming out of my mouth, so I guess it must have been blood. And I took that shipping tag and I wiped my mouth with it. The next morning, when he comes in, somebody comes in to see who I am, tend to me. He said, "Where's your dog tag? How come you got your dog tag all dirty?" I said, "Well, I had to wipe my blood out of my mouth." Well, anyhow, then they took me into the field hospital, cleaned me up, put me on a hospital ship.
Did they tell you this is how long the average machine gunner lasts in combat?
It's in writing. 3 minutes.
3 minutes of combat.
Yes.
You're going to be killed or wounded.
Yeah, in 3 minutes they'll spot you. That's why you want to fire for a burst of six or three or four times and then move. You don't stay in the same spot. Now, some of these places that make their surroundings out of concrete and everything else like Germany did and all that, once you throw a grenade, you got the whole outfit.
So you're 20 years old. You've never been in combat before, and you're landing at Leyte. And this is part of a larger plot because the Americans had been in the Philippines. They'd been either captured or chased out. Thousands of them are on the Bataan Death March. MacArthur gets out of there, but he says, "I shall return." And the day that he actually fulfilled that promise was the day you were landed on the same beach?
Yes. We landed on the 20th. On the 27th, we turned left on Tonawan, and then on the 28th, we were going into the Kailing. That evening, when all this action came on and I got wounded, I read where they had to go back 1,000 feet and regroup and start all over again to go into Kailing. That's when most of the fighting started. There wasn't too much fighting before there. On Catman Hill and some of those places there was, it was very slow, but it picked up. They weren't too prepared.
So what was happening right before you got hit?
I was looking through my binoculars like this, behind the gun itself. Just before that, a mortar shell blew up behind us, and actually none of us got any shrapnel, but the noise was deafening. It was rather quiet, but then all it takes is one fake shooter, and you got a bunch of people shooting. I remember the first action we got there, we were shooting up into a palm tree, and in a few seconds, the whole palm tree was pruned. The officer was, stop it, you know. It's amazing how they would be able to hide in a palm tree. There's not that much place to hide up those trees.
And you've made it clear how patriotic you felt, how important this was for you to do this for your country. But as you're entering into combat for the first time in your life, were you scared? Were you nervous? Anxious?
As long as you're whole, you're scared as hell. Well, if you get wounded. Now, when I got wounded, I didn't even think of dying. I don't know why. All I knew is I sprung up, ran about 10 feet, and fell, like I said a while ago. You're in it now. You're in it. I didn't get into the tough fighting where they did in Okinawa. So I got letters from some of the guys. They said you think Leyte was hell. This is altogether hell because they had thousands of people. They lost 1,000 soldiers. We lost 17,000. They're ready for us. It's like football, offense, defense. They're on defense. They know your spot. They know exactly. They've got their mortars all tuned in, and they know exactly where it's going to fall.
And when you got hit, what did that feel like?
Like a bee sting. Believe me, it didn't hit any bones, I guess that's why, like a bee sting.
So it came in not too far from your head, a couple inches.
Right here, yeah.
Right on your left shoulder.
I think he was trying to hit my head.
Good thing he missed. But he didn't miss by much.
No.
So it goes in vertically, almost, on your left shoulder, and exits down near your tailbone, kind
of? No, in the center of my back.
Right in the center of your back.
Half inch from my spine, I'd have been paralyzed.
Yeah.
That shakes me. In fact, it shakes the doctors when they see it to be that close to the spine.
It's kind of hard to do that. There's a lot of bones that he had to miss.
Well, that's probably where that blood came into my mouth. People ask me, how did you get blood through your mouth? I guess it must have been some of that internal injuries.
What about your arm? Did you have the use of that left arm at all?
I didn't have the use of that arm for more than a year. I was in the hospital. From that point on, I got discharged on November 45. We entered the United States in the back again on the 2nd of January of 45. I got discharged. The end of 45, I got discharged.
Mm-hmm.
My arm was useless. Even now, when the weather gets real cold, this arm is useless because I got a 30% disability on it.
Well, it sounds almost miraculous you were ever able to use it at all.
I use it for everything.
But I'm thinking about the first 30 minutes that you're wounded, because you described it. They get you on a stretcher, but you're still out there, and they're still firing all around you, and your buddy's able to pull you under a bush.
I've often wondered how they got me on the stretcher, but Meziak was the only one under the bush within reach of me, and he pulled it underneath. I guess what happened was they spread out once they got me on the stretcher, and that stretcher is on legs or something, and he's a big, great big Polack, great big Bulak. Too bad he had to die. He grabbed me and pulled me underneath.
What do you think would have happened to you if he didn't do that?
They would have nailed me.
They would have seen you.
Yeah. It's hard to say what would have happened. It wasn't too far. But that wasn't very much action, 8 days. Was it worth it? All the training? Now, did the government lose money on me, or did they make?
Well, I think everyone's going to form an opinion about that by the time we're done here. But you had a long journey. I mean, you just said you didn't have the use of your arm for a year.
Yes.
So this is a long time that you're dealing with this daily. When they first get you to a place where they can help, is it sinking into you that you may never be able to use this left arm again?
No, because I was always aggressive. When I came back in 1946, I had my truck and trailer. I was able to use my arm to haul bricks, sand, and gravel for our building. And by February, we were in business. I run the lathe for 13 years. I'd never seen a lathe before. But you learn those things. You're aggressive. It's your chance. You got to do it.
Sounds like you never took anything for granted either.
Listening to my father's stories? No. I'm just thankful that my mother and father were able to come to this country. And not only my mother and father, millions of other people came to this country for a reason. Safety and food. At least they would say that when you go to bed at night, you know that you're going to wake up in the morning.
I know this is something that's that you've lived with for more than 75 years.
Yes.
So it doesn't seem like as big of a deal as it might be to someone who hasn't gone through it. But again, you're a 20-year-old kid, and you don't know if you're going to keep your arm or not. Did you ever think they were going to have to amputate?
I knew I'd find a way. No, well, first of all, I used the word parting. I got to part your arm. I kind of figured that's got to mean cutting. I didn't care. You know, yes, I cared, but I was in this barracks. I had my three meals a day, and all of a sudden when they told me I was going to ship out about the 19th of December or something like that, I worked at it. These women, different women, worked on me constantly. They broke my knuckles. They broke my, when I say broke, it broke the calcium. I had calcium on every one of my joints, and she'd put her knee up in my arm and pull on it back and forth. This is when I was still in the...
Hollandia?
Yeah. And they'd break it, and it hurt terrible, especially, you know, breaking the fingers like this. I had a half a cast on. It was a full cast. Then they took a skill saw and cut the sides off and put a band around it. Well, at nighttime, when everybody's asleep, I used to take that thing off and just lay my arm down there. And it felt so good. After about an hour or so, I'd put the cast back on. It was a half cast, and I put the band and had a little clip on the end. Nobody knew it. I took it off. Boy, that when they gave me that turkey tail for Thanksgiving, and then I come home when the first dinner I came to, I said, I don't want no turkey tail.
How did you end up being able to use your arm again? Where did that come from, and how did you first get an idea that, hey, this may not be over here after all?
You heard about the guy, the farmer that picked up the calf and he ended up to be a cow?
I don't think I've heard that one.
Okay. You pick up the calf every day.
Yeah.
And finally you get to the point where it's a cow and you still pick it up. Well, you just don't give up. What are you going to gain if you don't? Mm. It's there. I got better. I remember the first job, I was holding some peaches and I put my hand underneath the box because I couldn't grab the cleat. And little by little, it came through. The reason I say I was driving truck, I'd work at commercials for so many hours a day and then take my truck at night and haul peaches, anything to make a buck.
I think you said earlier there was a moment where you felt a little twitch or something and you knew that there was still a chance there could be some muscle memory
my
there.
My bicep jumped, this one right here.
Uh-huh.
I would always try to jump it, and all of a sudden I noticed it was jumping.
You get hit. But because of the way the bullet came through, it didn't kill you, it didn't sever your spine. You may not be able to use your arm, but over that year in the hospital, a whole year in the hospital,
yes.
I think that's hard for any of us to fathom. What do you think it was for that year that kept your mind engaged or kept your heart hopeful that there was something to look forward to?
I was going to get well.
And the day that you were wounded, there were guys from your outfit that were killed?
We lost, all told, 2,500 on both places.
Leyte and Okinawa?
Yes.
Were any of those guys who were killed guys that you knew very well?
Yeah, I got a list of them in my book. I think there was about 20 of them.
These are guys that you'd trained with?
Yes.
That you'd been around? Yeah. So then you're in the hospital for a year. You're in the hospital when this new weapon, the atomic bomb, gets used. You're in the hospital when Japan surrenders. What was that like, getting that news, being back here in a hospital?
Okay. When the war in Germany was over, I didn't go to town to celebrate that night because I've got the feeling of hurting for the guys that got killed. A few months later, when the war was over in Japan, again, I did not go to town and celebrate. You know, in those days, Fulton Street was a celebration street. You could drive down the street and pick up a friend or pick up a girl or whatever you want to do, and you had a date and celebrate. I didn't go to either one of them because I felt for the guys, for the four, especially the four guys in my outfit. Eddie Wanovich, number two gunner, always carried a little Bible. He got killed. John Preble got killed. Woodrow Rogers just got a divorce. when he joined in our outfit. I didn't gamble, so people would ask me for money, and I would give them money. I didn't have that much, but anyhow, they'd ask me. So he told me one day, next time I see you loaning money to those guys, I'm going to block your head off. He said, say no to them. Well, I was a little bashful. I was a little didn't want to say no. I hate to say the fact that he died, because he was a pretty good guy. We had one, our number one gunner, that cooled down, and I got a letter from my captain to my mother. I'm doing everything in my power to get Joe back, because I was so involved in the machine gun. Well, that never happened. But he wrote a good letter to my mother.
Most of us alive today, most people listening to this, didn't live through World War II. Why is it important? Why does it still matter? And what should we understand and remember about what happened then?
If it didn't turn out the way it did, we would have lost our country. But you know what I'm proud of? I'm proud of the American youth. Dance hall boys, they called us. I thank God for everything.
Again, that was Joe Garabedian. So we've heard from two men who were wounded in the liberation of Leyte, but what about one of those MacArthur left behind on Corregidor when he took his family to safety back in 1942? We're going to get that perspective when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties, and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.